Then I talked about AKLT model. In the sense, these are all quantum models that are exactly solvable in the sense you can write down a very friendly ground state, but you don't know about the spectrum. Now, there are some new understanding of spectrum, but I also indicated to you, if you think about physically the spectrum of Majumdar-Ghosh model, the notion of quantum number fractionization becomes very simple. That is, you take a singlet bond and break it into a triplet, that's an excited state, not an eigenstate. Then the two spins fall apart, become two solitons, and they are the, say, an elementary example of quantum number fractionization. Similarly, I told about spin charge decoupling. Then I came to AKLT model, where you had a, you start with constitutive degree of freedom, which are spin one objects. But then the spins so organized and that so entangled, if you have an open chain, at the end you find two spin half objects. Really, you know, two spin half objects. So this emerges from interaction. And this is exemplified through what is called a parton construction, where you imagine a spin one to be made up of two spin half objects. Then, of course, when you have think about such partons, you have to suppress spin zero, because two spins can be combined into a spin singlet or a spin triplet. So you do that by hand. And then it tells you some very non-trivial excitations that are possible in interacting system. So at that time, I also alluded to fractional quantum Hall effect, where integer charged electrons organize to give, get entangled to give quasi-particles, which carry fractional charges. And they behave like Majorana and fermions and so on. So today, I will talk about a very friendly model. In fact, I have been spent a lot of time in my career in thinking about this model and doing some work with my colleague Shankar and Saptarshi Mandal and Dipti Monsen and others, and also with Ganesh here. We did some work on Kitaev model. So it's so let me tell the history. I mean, it's amazing how science develops. It is very important to look at experiments, as I have been telling. And experiments tell you what nature is telling you. Now, experiments talk through nature. No, sir, nature talks through experiments. So he told Phil Anderson many years ago that quantum fluctuations could become very important role, decisive role in some quantum magnets. You all know what an antiferromagnet is. You have simple cubic lattice. There are two sublattices. In one sublattice, all spins are up, in another spin, all sublattice spins are down. Then if you take a Heisenberg Hamiltonian and write down act the Hamiltonian on this state, it turns out it's not an eigenstate, because it will create, it's like, suppose you have a crystal, if you minimize the potential energy of interacting atoms, you may get a FCC lattice. But when you act with the kinetic energy operator, it will start moving things around. So you have a zero-point fluctuation. The same way in a spin crystal, so to say, antiferromagnet can be thought of as a spin crystal, there are zero-point fluctuations. And the zero-point fluctuations are so violent, they destroy long-range order and some condition. Anderson suggested that's what is happening in nature by looking at a family of oxides which did not exhibit any long-range antiferromagnetic order. So he wrote down, borrowing some idea from Linus Pauling, that Linus Pauling idea, which he, of resonating valence bond, you all know what it is, benzene, there is a Kekulé resonance, can be used in understanding quantum spin fluctuations in oxides. So at that time, I was fortunate enough to be at Princeton, so I joined hands with him. So we developed several approximate methods, which, you know, which was all based on experiments and some intuition. And many people respected it, many people did not respect it, because it was all approximate. We did enlargement of Hilbert space and so on. But it agreed with phenomenology enormously. So in one paper, we even talked about emergent gauge fields. In the original paper, Anderson pointed out that interacting spins in an antiferromagnet could support fermionic excitations, because normally spin waves are thought of as bosonic excitations. He suggested fermionic excitations can be there, which we try to show approximately.
So, why are they usually bosonic?
Sorry?
Why are they usually bosonic?
Why did he?
Why are they usually bosonic?
Ah, So if you take a, this is something, again, if you take a ferromagnet, if you create a spin wave, you can show it's a boson. Similarly, if you take an adderall antiferromagnet and do some Bogoliubov kind of theory, Hallstein-Primakov theory, you find low energy excitations which are Goldstone modes, they are bosons. So they are collective spin motions which are bosons. Sorry, I did not do that. I should have done it. Now, and it's very surprising, for if you talk to any magnetic some person and if you say that in an insulator you have fermionic excitation, he'll be surprised. And Anderson surprised the community by saying that that is there in lanthanum copper oxide, which is a magnetic insulator. So we did some approximate theory and brought it out. Then in the process, we also found out there are emergent gauge fields. There are no gauge degree of freedom to begin with, but things organize and give you fermions and emergent gauge fields. So it was all hanging in the air and it was there. Then came Kitaev. He wrote a very insightful paper which opened a window to a completely new world. And this model of Kitaev, unlike Majumdar Ghosh model or AKLT model or Shastri Sadharan model I talked about, is exactly solvable and you can get the full many body spectrum formally. And it's a very non-trivial model. In the sense, it connects you to topological quantum computation, anions, ideas of fractional quantum Hall effect, and many, many things and more. And in fact, it's still being, so it has opened a door to a completely rich world of Hilbert space. Okay. So today I'm going to talk that about that model. What I will do is I will present, define the model and present the exact solution. And then see how the dream that RVB theorist had at the beginning is realized exactly. So that's why when I first heard about this model, I was so delighted. It was Ashwin Viswanath who introduced me to this model. He was visiting me once at Chennai and he told me about this model. Then I started understanding it slowly. Then we started working with Shankar and Saptarshi Mandal and that was long back in 2007. So it's a very friendly model and there are good references. Kitaev has apparently a style of not publishing. His paper was there as Santa Barbara PowerPoint presentation. So he gave a talk of this model and it remained unpublished. Then he wrote a paper. When he writes a paper, they are big papers. It's a 111 page paper. So this is there in Annals of Physics. Very beautiful paper. So I encourage students to because some of you may be mathematics minded, you find very advanced mathematics like category theory emerging through this model. You need for category theory, fusion rules and all kinds of things coming through this model. Annals of Physics, 2211. So this is a very important paper which talks about the motivation that came from RVB theory and then he defines 2-3 models. Turns out Kitaev has not just one model. When you say Kitaev model, you ask which model. You already saw, thanks to Emily, she told you about this Kitaev spin chain, P-wave wire and you have Majorana-Fermion at the mode, that is one model. There is another model called Kitaev Torricoat model, we will discuss it briefly. And then there is another model which is a Kitaev honeycomb lattice model and I am sure there are more to come. So, this is a paper which discusses everything in great detail, mathematical detail, everything is worked out and the connection to Haldane's work that I was pointing out yesterday. That paper is called Quantum Hall Phenomena Without Magnetic Field. All these things have come out beautifully in this Kitaev model. And I already gave this reference. There is a Lejeune Summer School lecture. It was, apparently, Kitaev gave the talk and Chris Lahman, who is at Boston, he took notes and they are together. There is a beautiful article, pedagogic article on this. This is Kitaev and Chris Lahman. And this is again some book chapter, but it's there in the archive around this time. you can find out. This explains everything very beautifully. This is too much, and there are too many things here. The basic things are there. Okay. Now, what is a model? So, sorry, I did not introduce to you antiferromagnetic, Heisenberg, Hamiltonian, and long-range order, and so on. But it turns out we can define spin models in higher dimension, 2-dimension, 3-dimension, because we already spoke about Mott insulator. And in Mott insulators, low energy degree of freedom, spin degree of freedom. So we write down effective model involving spin degree of freedom. That's a famous Heisenberg model, which already we saw. Suppose I define a model like this with a coefficient j, it turns out, except for one dimension, it's not exactly solvable. You can do spin wave theory and various things. And there is, because it supports strong quantum fluctuations coming from this, as opposed to a ferromagnet, you can convince yourself that if you have a ferromagnetic Heisenberg model, you know the exact ground state. Because all spins are parallel, the quantum fluctuation cannot do anything. And that's the minimum ground state. It's a very unusual thing. So it supports Goldstone modes, whereas antiferromagnet supports a lot of quantum fluctuations. So we have been struggling to understand nature of quantum fluctuation. It's here Kitaev said, I will solve the model exactly and take care of quantum fluctuations by defining a spin model on a honeycomb lattice. This is a honeycomb lattice. You are all familiar with it in the context of benzene, graphene, for example. For example, in the convention,
just a question. So I see the picture where, like, for when we have a potential term and then a kinetic term, they don't commute, so it messes things up, and you have quantum fluctuations because of that. But I don't see why the intuition should be different between the ferromagnetic and the antiferromagnetic.
Ah, right. So
can it be decomposed?
Let me start with the ferromagnet. So now when you act with, so I look at two spins which are ferromagnetic coupled, I take this state and I claim this is a ground state and there is no quantum fluctuation, because when the potential energy term, namely SZ operates on it, it gives me the maximum energy, and then the kinetic energy term annihilates it. So there is no quantum fluctuation. So you can immediately generalize to any number of spins. On the other hand, if I start with a configuration like this, classically, you will be happy. This potential energy is very happy with this, but kinetic energy is not. Because when you operate with this term S dot S, it has this term S1 plus S2 minus plus. So, what does this term? This converts into, so this is like a 0-point fluctuation. So you can show that in the case of just two spins, this is the ground state, the famous singlet state. So because of quantum fluctuation, whereas the space is so restricted for a ferromagnet, the potential energy has all the role, and kinetic energy cannot do anything about it. This is a, in fact, this has very profound consequences. For example, because of this, there are Goldstone modes in a ferromagnet, which is quadratic in momentum. Whereas, because of this, Goldstone modes are linear in antiferromagnet. There are subtle and beautiful consequences behind it. So, it has a very interesting consequences. And in fact, it was Niel who proposed antiferromagnetic order. Originally, people were worried about ferromagnetism. It was Niel who said there are antiferromagnets. And then apparently, Landau never believed antiferromagnetism could exist, because he was a quantum guy. So he said the quantum fluctuation will destroy it. So he was far ahead of the time. Then later, you know, that's a very interesting story. Because Landau said, look at two spins, the quantum fluctuation and long range destroyed. Whereas two spins ferromagnet is not, so there should not be long range order in a quantum antiferromagnet. That was Landau's, also Pomeranchuk. They joined hands and told the world, but nobody listened to them. Then, because people observed experimentally antiferromagnet, That's where the spontaneous symmetry breaking comes. And then later, Anderson again brought in spin liquid and so on. Okay, good. So now, so yeah, when I have a honeycomb lattice, you define a unit cell like this, which has two atoms. And this unit cell, if you repeat it, forms a triangular lattice. So you say honeycomb lattice has two atoms. Okay, good. Now, what did Kitaev do? Kitaev said, I put spin half magnetic moments on every side, and then call three types of bond. Let me say this is my site I. Then I say the spin on the top as a coupling, I call it as Z bond, and this as X bond and Y bond. That is inclined like this and inclined. So every site has three kinds of bond, X bond, Y bond, and Z bond. Now, if I were to write down a Heisenberg Hamiltonian, what I will do, I will put Heisenberg coupling among every bond, at every bond. But Kitaev said, I do not know why he thought about it, he said, I will put, modify my Hamiltonian, or I will essentially take one third of Heisenberg Hamiltonian in the following way. I will say, the spins couple only through the X component of the spin operator for X bond, and then they couple only through Y component of the spin for the Y bond, which I denote by. So when I say IJX, it means bond connecting two neighboring sites connecting X bonds. This is two neighboring connect sites connecting Y bonds. Similarly, Z bond. So somebody familiar with Ising model will immediately recognize this is an Ising model. So I have Ising interaction, but however, when I go to different bond, I choose different bases or different direction. So consequently, it's not the trivial Ising model, because Ising model, if I were to write down SZ in every direction, then the terms commute and I can solve it exactly for the spectrum. Of course, statistical mechanics may be complicated, but the spectrum is at least formally written down because it's like classical model. Whereas here, it's not true. This does not commute with this, this does not commute with this. So Kitaev wrote this down. So if he has asked anybody whether this is solvable, they will say, of course, it's not solvable because they don't commute. Because it was Kitaev, he immediately said, okay. I don't know the logic of how he came across several of these things. So he said, this Hamiltonian is very special. It has lot of conserved quantities, because if you take Heisenberg model, the only conserved quantity is total spin, because you can see the total spin operator commutes to the Hamiltonian. Whereas Kitaev immediately pointed out, soon after writing down this model, this has local conserved quantities, which is the following. That is, now let me take what is called a plaquette, an elementary hexagon, and name the sites as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Then I define an operator BP for this plaquette. The rule is the following. When I am at site 1, I took the normal bond. That is a convention, so I take S1, Z. Then at site 2, the normal bond is S2, X. Then at site 3, it's S3, Y, S4, S5, S6, Z, X, Y. So what I do is I have a simple convention. It's like a Wilson loop operator, you can imagine. So I take a site, take a spin corresponding to the normal direction, and gradient. Then he also, you can now, with hindsight, you can say that this can be rewritten as, you know, for example, S1x can be written as S1 because of Pauli spin operator. So product of two component will give the third component. Because of that, what you will find is immediately, you can write it as S1, S2, Y, S2, S3, Z, S3, S4, X. Just rewrite it. Now you can show very quickly, if you take this operator, it commutes to the Hamiltonian. So I request you to check this. Simple algebra. So in this representation, it's not straightforward. Here it's, because what will happen is, you'll find this commutes with every piece, including the y piece and so on. So this commutes with the Hamiltonian. BP. For every p.
Oh, I'm sorry, what are the indices on the second line of the spin?
Yeah, so indices are, I take bond 1 and 2. Uh-huh. So I had 6 spins. Here there will be 12 spins because I replace each spin by this relation. For example, Z component is product of X and Y. Similarly, Y component is product of Z and X.
Okay.
And then I organize them. Then it looks like the bond term that appears in the Hamiltonian. S12y, S23z, S34x, and 3 more. And then the computation is very straightforward. So now, if the number of sites in the problem is n, is 2n, which is the convention, then the number of plaquettes is n. You can easily see crystallography. So you have n conserved quantities, which is amazing. And also, another very important simple thing is, this quantity BP square 1 plus 1. Because they are Pauli spin operators, you can square it, you will find that it's 1. So that means the eigenvalues of BP is going to be plus or minus 1. So these are all the only two values it can take. So it's like a magic, you know, it has happened. Now, This should help me to classify eigenstate, because once I have commuting operators, it should help me to operators that commute among themselves as well as with the Hamiltonian, it should help me to classify eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. I should also point out, it's not obvious, that BPs commute among themselves completely. For example, suppose I take this plaquette and take this neighboring plaquette, P prime. It's not obvious they will commute, but when you do it, you will find they commute. So the BPs commute among themselves and with the Hamiltonian. So they define n conserved quantities, where n is the number, 2n is the number of spins. Then immediately some miracle takes place. I have a Hilbert space whose dimension is 2 to the power of n, or, yeah, sorry, 2 to the power of 2n, because each site can have 2 states, so the 2 to the power of 2n. But now I find that these BPs are conserved quantities, and what is the number of values that BPs can take? 2 to the power of n, because each plaquette can have 2 values. So the Hilbert space gets broken into 2 to the power of n, and how many number of boxes? 2 to the power of n. It's a beautiful simplification, but still doesn't solve the problem, because this is still a large Hilbert space. Then you can convince yourself, this is what I will do next. Okay, so now I'm talking about quantum numbers of the states, good. What about eigenvalues? You can give me any BP, for example, I can give you a BP which is equal to 1 everywhere, or minus 1 everywhere, or 1 in half place and somewhere else minus 1. So which one will give me the ground state? That's where the next miracle takes place. So Kitaev says, okay, I will solve the problem now for you. So how does he solve it? He goes to a Parton representation in the modern language. In fact, this is what we did in RVB theory, anticipating quantum number fractionization, anticipating spin one half excitations in a quantum spin liquid. We said, a spin operator, finally, when you ask a question, SA plus operator, finally, it's doing something in terms of electron operator. What is happening? It is going to a site and annihilating a downspin and creating an upspin. So this is the, in terms of constituent electron operators, this is the operator. Similarly, for minus, SA minus, then for SA, Z, it will be NI up minus NI down. Because when a spin is up, this is zero. When a spin is down, this is zero. Okay. But however, if you think about this representation, it's a nice representation. But however, if you think about the Hilbert space of C operators, it's a Fermi oscillator. So there can be a one fermion with upspin or zero fermion with upspin. So the Hilbert space is 2 to the power of 2 dimensional. So then I implicitly know that I am dealing with Mott insulator, where there is a local constraint that there cannot be 2 electrons at a given site. So there can be upspin or a downspin, never a double occupancy, or never an empty site. So I put this constraint by hand that Ni up plus Ni down equal to 1. In general, this can be 0, 1, or 2. So that's a full Hilbert space, which is 2-4 dimensional. So once I put this constraint, then this will be a faithful representation. And this is what we used in our RVB theory and got lots of insights and various things. Yes?
Sorry, the connection with the Mott insulator, I thought that was just saying that the, for some reason, be that the lattice spacing is large or there's some potential.
Exactly. So
there will just be no exchange.
Yeah. So the Mott insulator comes because of strong Coulomb repulsion and the charge fluctuation is suppressed. Because in a Mott insulator, if you take a free Fermi gas and if you focus at a half filling, if you focus on a given site, quantum fluctuations can have you upspin or a downspin or a doubly occupied site or empty site. So all of them will occur with equal probability. But once you reach a Mott insulating limit, the charge fluctuation will be suppressed. So we have effective Hamiltonian in terms of charge degree of freedom. So I motivated how the effective Hamiltonian of spin degree of freedom occur and how the coupling comes through virtual fluctuation. That's what I did last time. So a Mott insulator for practical purposes, when somebody tells you there is a Mott insulator, they will say, there is an exchange coupling, I don't know how it comes. But however, I have a strict constraint that I've already said there is only one electron. And that is what I'm representing here. Okay.
I'm sorry, I missed exactly where that constraint comes in. Like how does that connect to the Plaquette?
This is a general problem. When I solve any problem, I can do this because I'm not comfortable with spin operator, poly spin operator. I'm comfortable with the electron operator. And I will say that a spin flip corresponds to removal of an up down spin electron and replace it by an upspin electron. So this is a good representation, provided I keep it in mind this. So we use this constraint not to solve Kutayev model because we didn't have Kutayev model at that time. We solved Heisenberg model. Sorry, I didn't miss a lot of history and this background.
This makes sense. Oh, so they're fermions that have spin.
Yeah.
And before they were just spins that can't move.
Correct.
And now we have turned them into fermions, but fermions sometimes have 2 on one site, but that's not allowed.
That's not allowed, exactly. But then okay. I'll become liberal and allow it.
Okay, great.
That's where, you know, this, okay. This is good. So you have this constraint. Then we can't take this constraint and when you solve the problem. So what we did was, when we solved this problem, we closed our eyes and forgot about this local constraint. We only took care of some global constraint. So in some sense, what I'm doing is, this is my limit Hilbert space, 2 to the power of n dimensional. I go to the larger Hilbert space, which is 4 to the power of n dimensional. And then it turns out when you go to larger Hilbert space, it can be solved approximately more easily. And then pretend to come back or project out. We didn't do that. We said it can be done. But in this procedure itself, we got lots of insight. So we're very excited about it. Now, all these miracles happen in Kutayev, when Kutayev does this, but in a more exact way. That's what I will.
Okay.
So what did Kutayev do? He didn't go to this representation. He said a representation which is similar to this. So he said, let me take a spin operator. For example, if you take a fermion operator, C, you can write it as this is a complex Dirac fermion operator which anticommutes. You can formally write it as a linear combination of a real part and imaginary part, a complex combination. then you only know that C dagger is C anticommute. Then that implies that this AIs this just follows by from the computational relation of C. In particular, what is interesting is if you take this AI and square it, you get 1. Yeah.
I buy this is possible. It works like algebraically. That's fine. In the
correct.
But is there a sense in which, just like sort of from some perspective of thinking about matrix elements or something, that C is complex and A is real? Like, if you just gave me those operators by themselves, could I tell? Do they have a space that they live on?
Correct. Exactly. This is a subtle point. So because when you write it down, this I briefly indicated last time. When you do this, the Hilbert space of this Fermi oscillator is 2. I can have a fermion or no fermion. Okay. Whereas I have introduced 2 auxiliary particles, A and B, then what is the Hilbert space? You will immediately say it's square root of 2.
Okay.
So mathematically it becomes a square root of 2, but physically it's very difficult to conceive it. But condensed matter system organizes and gives you square root of Hilbert space locally. That's a remarkable thing with condensed matter. The way it gave spin half at the end of a chain in AKLT model, even though it's made up of spin 1, spins were splintered and half of it appears essentially because of many body entanglement organization. Here, the electrons so spin so interact, they give you locally Hilbert space which is square root of 2. So the whole system has Hilbert space dimension which is happily integer. In fact, very interestingly, there is a very important paper by Emery and my friend Kivilson, both are I encourage people to interest 2-channel Kondo. They solved something called Kondo problem, where conduction electrons interact with the localized spin impurity, and there are 2 channels. I will forget about it. What they found was, they found out at the end of the day when they solved the problem by some RG sense, they found a local degree of freedom, which is a Majorana fermion. So the Hilbert space is locally square root of 2. Then in their problem, the partner square root of 2 was on the boundary. And it was there. And amazingly, this was applied to heavy fermion problem. And people measured specific heat. And you know, if you have a spin degree of freedom with 2, then you know the specific heat is log 2. From specific heat, you can measure entropy, it's log 2. And they measured entropy, they found half log 2. So Hilbert space fractionization is real for all practical purposes at low energy scale.
So, like, when we say that it is still, like, there doesn't exist a Hilbert space with actual dimension root 2.
No, yeah, effectively it looks like that.
It just looks like that.
So exactly.
Is the right way to, like, when we say, oh, it acts on a Hilbert space of root 2, is the right way to think about that?
For mathematical purposes, yes.
Yeah. Should you think about operator algebras instead?
Exactly. So according to this rule, these operator algebras, and if you want to become rigorous, they live in square root of 2 Hilbert space.
Okay.
In fact, there are something called Fibonacci anions. They're even more irrational. They live in Hilbert space whose dimension is square root of 3. So, you know, all kinds of things happen and there is a lot of but they're all effective physics at low energy scales. The constituent degree, it's like, you know, a painter, you know, you paint something, you have a pencil and paper and then this thing, you can paint anything. That's kind of painting that's going on here. Okay, good. Now, what did Kitaev do? Kitaev wrote down in fact, very similar to the one I said, Kitaev said, let me at every site introduce 4 Majorana fermion. That is, I look at a site I, and I have a 0 component Majorana fermion, and X component, Y component, Z component. Just, and the Hilbert space will be 4 naturally. If fact, I can write it in terms of electron operator also, but I will not do it now. Then Kitaev said, my spin operator, SIX, will be CI naught CIX. Then he says, Kitaev says, you make this substitution and then you will find that it obeys Pauli spin algebra by construction. I have just decomposed Pauli spin operator in this line, but however, I am living in a larger Hilbert space. So I have to come back to reality. The Hilbert space is so. Then he says, okay, you can come back to reality. What you do is you say that there is a local constraint which is equal to 1. I had a local constraint which is the sum of occupation number. So according to Kitaev, this is a good representation, and then you have to take at the end of the day a local constraint. And some miracle took place when you do this in Kitaev model. What it did is it gave you a gauge theory in which, you know, you all know in, when you learn electrodynamics and gauge theories, physical observables are electric and magnetic fields. But then Maxwell and others introduced vector potential and scalar potential. And when you come to quantum physics or quantum field theory, they are more basic than electric and magnetic field. So you have gauge degree of freedom. So what Kitaev did was, it's amazing. I will schematically say it and then come to it. So you remember I had a 4 to the power of n dimensional, 2 to the power of 2n dimensional Hilbert space. So Kitaev showed that by this trick, I'm solving the problem, but I'm introducing a Z2 gauge degree of freedom in the problem. Then what I have is, I have 2 to the power of n physical Hilbert space and 2 to the power of n gauge copies. So each one has identical spectrum, but they are gauge copies. This miracle takes place in Kitaev model. It did not take place in our model. It was approximate. So this is where I'll still find mysterious how Kitaev managed to do this. Okay, now this is very easily seen once I make substitution. Okay, so what I, let me take the first term. I substitute using this substitution, then what I will get? I will get CI dash. So I have a 4 fermion term. But then life is very difficult when you have 4 fermion term. You have to do Hartree-Fock theory and so on. Then there was a voice from the sky which said that this term is special, because if you look at these square terms that I have, you can convince yourself that that commutes with everybody in the Hamiltonian, with the full Hamiltonian and among themselves. So normally what we would have done, a condensed matter physicist, we'll do Hartree-Fock theory. But you have 4 fermion term, we replace something by an average value. But here you don't need to replace it by average value, because it commutes with everybody. And then in particular, if you look at the square of this using, so Kitaev called this as UIJX. So what you find is, this XX term becomes a hopping of Majorana fermion in the presence of an external field which can take value plus or minus 1, so which he calls as UIJ. And then in particular, most important thing is this UIJ for any alpha commutes with the Hamiltonian. So Kitaev shared a beautiful commutation relation of local Plaquet operators. Now in this representation, the link, new sets of link operators come into the Hamiltonian.
Oh, but why are you calling this a link operator?
Because it connects two sites. So this operator UIJ connects two sites, so it's called link operator.
But, because, now the Hamiltonian is still not quadratic, so
So once it commutes, I can put, so that means I can put a C number for that.
Okay.
I can put a value plus or minus 1. Then for a given set of U's, I'm jumping ahead. Okay, so what I did was, I in this representation becomes very simple. Ca naught, Cj naught, x. Similarly.
Also, one thing on the notation: these are Majorana fermions now.
Exactly.
So you called them A and B over here.
Exactly. So sorry, I should have. Yeah. Now, in fact, Kitaev did not motivate it by starting with a Dirac fermion, which is what we did. He said, no, I'll just start with some 4 Majorana fermion, and then use, and you can connect it. In fact, there was a beautiful paper by Chetan Nayak and Burenel. They showed that you can get all the results of Kitaev by doing dirty RVB mean field theory. Exact result. Using the old RVB mean field theory, but except that it's not elegant. But it, all the same, it gives exact result. Whereas Kitaev had found this very elegant representation, and in fact, this also corresponds to other later developments. Turns out spin operators can be written in terms of Majorana fermion operators in 2-3 ways. This is one of the ways which has been used. In fact, it was earlier used by others like Swellig and Coleman in the context of heavy fermions. That's a separate story.
I think I just got a little lost. What now the difference between the first honeycomb model and this?
It's the same honeycomb model.
It is.
I'm rewriting the honeycomb model in terms of Kitaev's Majorana fermion representation. And keeping in mind that I have to respect this constraint when I solve the problem.
Right. So he had two different ways of solving the same
model. No, he has only one way of solving it. So he didn't see when he found the Plaquette commutation relation, he did not solve the problem. It helped him to classify many body eigenstates in terms of BP variables.
But doesn't that help you find the ground state?
No, not yet. Because, yeah, that's a very important point. Here he told you that the many body eigenstates get decomposed into 2 to the power of n disjoint Hilbert spaces. But each Hilbert space, you don't know the spectrum. Now we will find the spectrum. That is it. So what Kitaev did was, he said that not now he has just rewrote the Hamiltonian, and then he also observed these U operators. Be it on the X link or a Y link, or they all commute to the Hamiltonian. So once I have a term, an operator that commutes to the Hamiltonian, I'm at liberty to replace it by its eigenvalue. So this operator, since it commutes to the Hamiltonian, it has 2 eigenvalues. I can put it as 1 or minus 1.
But these are not star operators.
Sorry?
They're not, because it's separate from.
Then they're standard. Let me tell the logic. I started with spin operators, Pauli spin operators. Now I'm giving a representation for the spin operator in terms of Majorana fermion. It's a faithful representation, provided it keep in mind this constraint. So I rewrite Kitaev Hamiltonian in terms of this Majorana spin operator. Then they gave me 4 fermion terms. And then I observed, this is Kitaev observes, that this one piece of that 4 fermion term actually commutes to the rest of the Hamiltonian. Every piece. I think you'll appreciate it only when you work it out. I'm sorry.
I think your question was if they were star. Is that what you said?
Yeah, because I think I just, because it's a separate model from toric code. Right, so these are
toric code is separate.
So these are not, because I just want to make sure.
Toric code is even simpler. Toric code is even simpler. It will come as one limit of toric code.
But it seems to just be a similar idea in some sense that you have something.
Correct. See, in toric code, there is no running fermions. Everything is static. I will come to toric code. Here, there are fermions that are running around. They form a band and so on. In toric code, everything is flat. It's practically classical, except that excitations are anionic. I will come to that. So far you are with me. That is, I didn't do anything. I just started with Kitaev Hamiltonian and observed that the BP operator's commute. That helps me to solve the problem to some extent, not find the spectrum. Now Kitay introduces this Majorana representation. And then he substitutes, then he finds a miracle that among these four fermions, I can combine two, and they all commute with each other and with the Hamiltonian. Then how many U's are possible? Because every link, I can have two values. Two. So if the number of links is, let me see, yeah. I think again it's for number of. So there are n links in this honeycomb lattice, n bonds, and each one can have two values. So I have all of a sudden reduced the problem of Hamiltonian into solving spectrum of free Majorana fermions, but hopping in the presence of a background U field, which can take plus 1 or minus 1. And this is where emergent Z2 gauge field comes. Now you will recognize that this is a Z2 gauge field. Why Z2? Because you can convince yourself that if I take this link field Uij and replace it by tau I, tau j, I can compensate for this tau j by replacing this Majorana fermion operator Cix, for example, by tau I, because if we do a local gauge transformation, I will have a tau I tau j, and I will get a tau I tau j, and if tau is plus or minus 1, then it disappears. So what I have discovered is a Z2 local gauge theory structure in this problem. So I didn't have any such thing in terms of the full many body theory, full spin variables, there are only some local global conservation laws. Whereas now in this new representation, I have enormous local conservation laws, but I have to keep in mind I am in a redundant Hilbert space. But what is beautiful is, it becomes an exact Z2 gauge theory structure. So I assume that you know Z2 gauge theory. For example, in Z2 gauge theory, you have link variables in a lattice. Then what is physically important are Wilson loop. For example, if you take this Uij and I call it as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. If I take U1, 2, this is in the y direction, U2, 3 in the z direction, and U3, 4 in the x direction, and similarly 3 U's. This is analogous to the famous Wilson loop term. This is gauge invariant because it measures. So in the same way, you can see this is a gauge invariant form, because if I do a gauge transformation, the tau's coming from everything will get annihilated. So, and this is nothing but our old BP. Yeah.
So this whole gauge structure, it only happens in the fermionic picture, right?
Like, correct. Yeah,
is
exactly.
There any way that I can find anything that's not gauge invariant if I'm just thinking about the original spins, or does that all like cancel out through all of this?
Yeah. Okay, that's a very good point. So, I have this gauge structure. This gauge structure emerges when I go to enlarged Hilbert space. What is the connection of this with in terms of spin variable? That's a question. And in fact, there are many, two things I want to point out. There's a beautiful work by Saptarshi Mandal when he was a student at Math Science. Unfortunately, it was not published. We presented it in a Bangalore conference. And then in parallel, Tao Xiang from Beijing, he wrote a beautiful paper, Solving Kitay Model Exactly by Jordan-Wigner Transformation. You have heard about Jordan-Wigner Transformation on a one-dimensional chain, how it beautifully works. And Saptarshi showed that it works in two-dimension also due to some miracle of Kitay Hamiltonian. Unfortunately, he didn't publish it, but it was published, you know, independently by Tao Xiang. So there is no issue of gauge invariance, because everything is in terms of physical objects. Here, when they enlarge the Hilbert space, the enlargement gets accommodated exactly as gauge copies. That's a miracle of Kitay model. As I told you, my problem is in 2 to the power of 2 in Hilbert space. Then I rewrite it in this representation. Then what I do is for Kitaev model, I get gauge copies, and then if I solve the problem in any one of the gauge, it is fine. Yeah.
Does that mean that this is a gauge fixing condition? That the n plus n equals 1 term?
That's not the gauge fixing. That's only the okay. Yeah, let me look at it. So let me see. Do I know the answer for that? I will have to think about it a little bit. Either it's related to gauge fixing, or I will think about it and give you the answer. But the point is, you have enlarged the Hilbert space from 2 to the power of 2n to 4 to the power of 2n because of Majorana-Fermian representation. Then what you find is that breaks into 2 to the power of 2n copies of where gauge copies. And then what Kitaev essentially does is he solves it in one of the copies. For example, you choose a gauge for then there are many other things. So now I have reduced the problem into Majorana-Fermian's hopping on a lattice. Because, yeah.
So I didn't understand the point you're making. So there are many gauge sectors.
Copies.
Gauge copies or gauge sectors?
Exactly. So they're called gauge copies, gauge sectors.
So are you saying the solution in one sector determines the solution in the other?
Exactly. The spectrum are identical. In gauge theory, electrodynamics, you have this notion of gauge copies. So the spectrum is identical in every choice of gauge.
So, but there are some conserved quantities that can be different. So
No. In Kitaev model, there are exactly 2 to the power of 2n gauge copies with identical spectrum. Now, when I go from one copy to another copy, what I do is, for example, let me start with the ground state in which all the u's are 1.
Yes.
Then so u's are 1. Then what I do is I do an arbitrary gauge transformation. I replace uij by tau I uij tau j. Then you will find that they come here. Then they look very different. But however, hidden that there is a matrix, that's some kind of matrix symmetry. Which brings it back to this thing. So that's the gauge copies. Okay. So, my God, it always happens. So the very important point is by going to this enlarged degree of freedom, you had these partons. Now you sign, notice that these partons become alive here. Some of the partons pair up. For example, this parton pairs up into gauge variable, and some parton, namely the zero component, they run around. Now you can solve this problem. When you solve this problem, Kitaev showed it becomes like a graphene problem. What else do you want? So, this again, I'm not doing it because there is no time. It's very trivial to solve this because you put all the u equal to 1. So you have essentially Ci naught, Ci j, and there will be a I here because to make it Hermitian. So you would simply solve Majorana-Fermian hopping on a honeycomb lattice. And this problem has been studied in the context of graphene where you don't have Majorana-Fermian, you have complex fermions, Dirac fermions hopping on a lattice, and you know the famous band structure. But what is interesting is Majorana-Fermian, their particles are their own antiparticles. Whereas if you take graphene, which is a half-filled band, you can add an electron or you can remove an electron. So particle and holes are excitations, they are like a particle and antiparticle in a Dirac C. Whereas, according to Majorana, particle and antiparticle get identified. And that's what happens when you solve this problem. What you find is, you get half of Dirac spectrum or graphene spectrum in the problem. Yes, you have a Question?
No, sir. I do. Which half is it?
I thought you raised your hand. Okay.
Sorry, I did not raise my hand. I do have a question.
Okay.
Like what? How does that happen?
Yeah. Okay. We'll, yeah.
I was just curious because you say, I mean, this relates to something I've been asking myself all along now. I mean, graphene is an actual material, right? And then we've been looking at all these toy Hamiltonians, and you've been referring a little bit.
Yes. So graphene is an actual material made up of electrons.
Yeah.
Whereas alpha ruthenium chloride, which I did not have time, there is another material, very popular material, is well approximated by Kitaev Hamiltonian. So that supports Majorana fermions.
Was that like a chance side discovery, or did they, how did they find out?
Oh, this was my friend Kaliulin and Jackali, two friends from Germany, Russian friend from Germany. They found out nature is always kind. I told one somewhere, you find a non-trivial model, however trivial it may be, as long as it's exactly solvable, nature finds a way to realize it, because nature is very rich. So Kaliulin, after a few years after Kitaev's model, they found out there are a family of oxides, which because of spin orbit coupling, they have very strong anisotropy in their spin Hamiltonian, and it becomes Kitaev Hamiltonian, to a good approximation. Then there is a whole active field now, the field of activity, about experimental realization of Kitaev model. And they have seen the spectrum using neutron scattering and so on.
I'm very curious how many kind of artificial materials people synthesize versus just go out and find.
No, this was motivated because Kitaev model was there so beautifully. So they went around and found out that there are these oxides. There are these chlorates. Okay, I think I should stop here because the next speaker will come and it has to be clean now.